provinces. President Pezeshkian discusses tensions in Syria with regional leaders as Iran's military advisors arrive in the Syrian capital. And the Israeli ethnic cleansing operations in the past day claims the lives of 37 more Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Hello and welcome to World News. Let's go ahead and get started with the stories that matter. The Syrian army continues its operations against Takfiri terrorist groups attempting to take over more areas in the northern and western parts of the Arab country. Syrian and Russian fighter jets jointly pounded the headquarters and operations rooms of the terrorists and targeted their convoys in Idlib, as well as in the eastern and northern countryside of Aleppo province. The country's air defense also intercepted a number of terrorist drones over areas around the city of Hama. Earlier, the Syrian military confirmed the killing of hundreds more terrorists and the destruction of their armored vehicles and equipment in Idlib, Hama, and Aleppo. Clashes between the army and the foreign-backed terrorists erupted after Takfiri groups, including the Nusra Front, launched a surprise attack on some parts of Syria last week. Tim Anderson, the director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, joined us earlier from Sydney to weigh in on the situation in Syria.
Now mainly for Syria rather than other countries, and the problem has been that it's been unfinished business in northern Syria and the occupation of parts of Syria by the Turkish armed forces. They have safe haven effectively in parts of northern Idlib and other parts of northern Syria there. So that's the unfinished business there. It was the liberation of Idlib from these terrorist groups was stalled more than 4 years ago when there were threats of NATO countries going to attack Syria. And then Mr. Putin suggested that he was going to carry out some diplomatic initiatives with the Turkish leader. Ultimately, none of those agreements came to anything, and that's why we were left with a situation where they were able to mount this counterattack using more terrorists coming in through Turkey and using the residual groups that were sitting there in Idlib city and parts of northern Idlib. I believe the Syrian army by itself and with its partners could remove all of those groups from northern Syria. But the problem, as I said, has been the deployment of the Turkish military in support of those groups, particularly in northern Idlib. The army themselves, I've visited them in North Hama, in Sarakeb, in Latakia on the side of Idlib, in parts of Idlib. They're ready to move in, but they've been waiting for the political go-ahead.
Well, Iran says the resurgence of terrorism in parts of Syria was planned for months and facilitated by the Israeli aggression against Lebanon. The foreign ministry spokesman said Israel has actively supported terror in the region, both to weaken resistance groups and to undermine regional security. Smail Begay touched on signals by Israel and its Western backers that point to their role in destabilizing Syria. He cited U.S. officials' comment that the terrorists are no threat to U.S. forces and Israeli officials' remarks about how the developments benefit the regime by weakening the resistance front. Begay stressed that Saturday's visit by the Iranian foreign minister to Damascus sent a clear message that Tehran will firmly support the Arab nation against the terrorists. He warned that terror tends to spread and called on all regional countries, especially Syria's neighbors, to double up their efforts to fight the resurgence of terrorists in Syria.
The recent resurgence of terrorism in Syria, led by the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham group, began with a surprise offensive in late November, targeting the city of Aleppo. This offensive resulted in the capture of several towns and villages, coinciding with the Israeli regime's agreement to a ceasefire with Lebanon. Far from being a coincidence, many believe that Israel is avenging its loss in Lebanon and Gaza through its support for the resurgence of terrorism in Syria. Just 48 hours before the Aleppo attack, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu warned Syrian President Bashar al-Assad not to provoke Israel, specifically regarding arms transfers to Hezbollah through Syrian territory. Over the past year, Israel has conducted more than 70 strikes in Syria, targeting border crossings deemed routes for arms transfer to Hezbollah, as well as the group's warehouses and facilities within Syrian territory. This illegal aggression has created an opportunity for terrorist groups to advance across the Arab country, particularly as the Lebanese resistance group Hezbollah is recovering from its recent war with Israel. Syria's support for the resistance front has long irritated Israel, which has occupied the Golan Heights since the 1967 war. This support was underscored in a speech by the late Hamas political bureau leader Yahya Sinwar.
For the construction of Quds Axis, we will reconcile with Assad's Syria, which is one of our key allies in the Levant. We will strengthen our relations with Hezbollah, which is the main arm in the Levant, and in order to expand the field of resistance in Yemen and Iraq, we need to broaden our relations.
Osama Hamdan, head of the international relations for Hamas, had also elaborated on the matter, highlighting the strategic importance of Syria for resistance groups.
The Syrian position that is clearly expressed is a position of support for the Palestinian people and their resistance, whether on the official level or on the level of Syrian media. But everyone knows what happened to Syria during the past decade, and this had an impact on Syria's abilities. We cannot forget the Syrian position and the Syrian effort over decades that have passed before the last decade. How Syria supported the resistance and how it stood by the side of the resistance and how it endured the support of the resistance. In this time period, we believe that what happened to Syria may not have allowed it to play the same role.
Syria has time and again accused Israel of aiding terrorist groups like Hayat Tahrir al-Sham and highlighted the suspicious timing between Israeli airstrikes and subsequent terrorist attacks on government-held areas. The Syrian government had previously managed to defeat terrorist groups through coordinated military offensives and airstrikes, often with support from allies like Russia and Iran. Following the surprise terrorist attack on November 27, the government has now launched a robust counteroffensive to reclaim lost territories and eliminate terrorist threats.
The Iranian president has spoken to regional leaders about the recent resurgence of terrorists in Syria. In a phone call with the Syrian president, Masoud Pezeshkian expressed confidence Damascus would once again foil Israeli plots against Syrian security and stability. Pezeshkian vowed that Iran would continue to stand by the Syrian government and nation. Assad, in return, hailed Iran's longstanding support and said the main goal of the U.S.-Israeli plot is to partition Syria. In another phone call, Pezeshkian and Russian President Vladimir Putin expressed unconditional support for the Syrian government to restore constitutional order and territorial sovereignty. They also stressed the importance of coordinating with Turkey. Pezeshkian also got on the phone with the Qatari emir and stressed that the spread of terrorism in the region serves no one's interests. Hence, all should join hands to counter the scourge. Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad al-Thani, for his part, called for preserving Syria's territorial integrity and stressed a political solution to the crisis. The Iranian and Turkish foreign ministers have expressed readiness to help deal with the crisis in Syria. During a joint press conference, the Iranian foreign minister said the resurgence of terrorism in Syria has jeopardized the security of the country. Abbas Araghchi said the instability will also affect the Arab country's neighbors. He further stressed that Takfiri groups in Syria are closely linked to the U.S. and Israel. The top Iranian diplomat added that he and his Turkish counterpart discussed the restoration of stability to Syria. Hakan Fidan, for his part, said Ankara respects the territorial integrity of Syria. He said Turkey will never tolerate the activity of terrorist organizations. Iran has already vowed full support for Damascus to counter the terrorists and their backers. Iran has strongly condemned a resolution recently passed by the European Parliament accusing the country of violating women's rights. An advisor to Iran's foreign minister and the director general for human rights and women affairs said the resolution overlooked the significant role Iranian women play in the social, economic and political domains. Marzia Afkam called it a politically motivated and interventionist move on the part of the 27-nation bloc. She also criticized the European Parliament for pointing its finger at Iran while ignoring the global public outrage over human rights violations, including ethnic cleansing of Palestinians by the Israeli regime. The European Parliament approved a resolution over the alleged human rights violations in Iran on Thursday. In the Iranian capital, Tehran, a heartfelt farewell has been held for Brigadier General Qiomarz Pourhashemi, a senior IRGC commander martyred in Syria. As Iran mourns this national hero, the ceremony underscores the nation's unwavering commitment to supporting Syria in its ongoing fight against foreign-backed terrorism. Gisu Misha Ahmadi has more.
A solemn ceremony to bid farewell to a national hero. A loss that underscores the continued sacrifices made by Iranian military advisors in the region as they maintain peace and stability in the face of threats from terrorist groups. Martyred in Aleppo last week, senior IRGC commander Brigadier General Qiomarz Pourhashemi played a vital role in assisting Syrian forces, serving as a military advisor.
Martyr Pourhashemi was a brave and dedicated commander, a symbol of sacrifice. His martyrdom is a reminder of the unyielding commitment we have to support Syria in its struggle against foreign-backed terrorists. Despite these attacks, we remain resolute in our mission.
Martyr Pourhashemi lost his life in Aleppo during a large-scale assault by foreign-backed terrorists targeting Syrian military positions. This attack, reportedly carried out by the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham group, marked a significant escalation in the ongoing conflict in Syria, making the fight against them and the presence of Iranian military advisors even more crucial. Martyr Pourhashemi's son, feeling proud despite the loss.
I am grateful to God that my father achieved what he always wished for, to sacrifice his life in the righteous path. My father believed in defending the innocent and fighting terrorism wherever it existed. Losing him is painful, but I take great pride in knowing that his sacrifice has helped bring peace to many. I always remember how committed he was to the resistance. He was fighting for his country and for Syria, aiming for the region to be peaceful. His legacy will continue through the strength of the Iranian forces and the Syrian people.
General Pourhashemi's martyrdom comes amid ongoing efforts by Iran to support Syria in its fight against terrorism. Since 2011, Iran has maintained an advisory mission in Syria at the request of the Syrian government. The Iranian military advisors have been instrumental in assisting Syrian forces reclaim territory and restore security.
Martyr Pourhashemi was not only a great warrior, but also a true man. At a time when our enemies tried to weaken the resistance, he stood firm and sacrificed his life. His blood will not be in vain.
As the country mourns the loss of this brave commander, Iranians remain firm in their support for Syria, signaling that this tragedy will not deter their commitment to regional peace and security.
Martyr Qiomarz Pourhashemi was not the first, and he will not be the last, as Iran remains steadfast in its support for Syria. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
The Lebanese army has reported an Israeli drone strike on an area in the country's east in violation of a recent ceasefire deal between Beirut and the Tel Aviv regime. The drone strike led to the injury of a Lebanese soldier. This comes as France accused the Israeli military of violating the ceasefire 52 times, including an attack that resulted in the death of three Lebanese civilians. According to Israeli media, French officials stressed that the regime acted without consulting the International Committee, which is responsible for monitoring the deal. Officials quoted as saying that the Lebanese have so far been fully committed to the ceasefire. However, the Israeli regime defended its actions, saying it would continue its attacks until the monitoring committee becomes fully operational. The ceasefire is largely holding, but sporadic Israeli attacks in breach of the truce were reported soon after the deal came into effect last week. Well, there's more death and destruction in Gaza as the Israeli military presses ahead with its attacks across a blockaded territory. According to Gaza's health ministry, 37 Palestinians were killed and 108 others injured in 24 hours. The Israeli military struck a residential building in Beit Lahia, causing a huge fire and a number of casualties. Also, the IOF's intense aggression on northern Gaza rages for the 60th day. Meanwhile, UN Security General Antonio Guterres has described Gaza's situation as appalling and apocalyptic. Guterres warned that conditions faced by Palestinians in the Strip may amount to the gravest international crimes. The genocidal war on Gaza, launched in October last year, has killed more than 44,400 Palestinians and wounded over 105,000 others. Ahmed al-Najjar, our correspondent in Khan Yunis, southern Gaza, explains how the Israeli regime impedes the delivery of aid most needed by Palestinians in the besieged Strip. Let's take a listen.
The Israelis are actually translating their intentions of keeping the besieged Strip out of services and out of any kind of support, whether it was by targeting the international organizations and obstructing their operations here in the Strip, or indirectly leading to the suspension of their operation, as what we have seen over the past couple of days following the United Nations UNRWA. Announcing that they will be suspending their operations here in the besieged Strip. And Rafah City, that is considered the main gate for the Gaza Strip with the outside world to get any humanitarian or commercial products to enter into the Strip, the occupation is not only suspending the amount and the number of trucks that is allowed into the Strip, but also continues to target the local security forces, the local police, who are neither a resistance member nor they are affiliated with any political factions here, but only with a sole job. It is to secure these trucks that is entering into the Strip. But the occupation is insisting to create a state of chaos to make it impossible for the Gazans here to receive any smooth or fluent process of getting access to these aid that they are desperately need.
A political and economic alliance of six Persian Gulf Arab countries has called for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. The heads of states of the bloc, in a final statement issued at the end of their summit in Kuwait, emphasized the need for the end of the Israeli aggression against Gaza. They also called for finding sustainable ways for the Palestinian cause. The group also appreciated Qatar's role for its ceasefire efforts to help stop the war on Gaza. The bloc consists of Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. In the statement, they also condemned Israeli attacks on Lebanon and welcomed a ceasefire there. The group voiced concern on the escalation of tension in the region by the Israeli regime.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
It is hard to believe that a country that was an economic leader in Europe and in the world in some respects is now fighting for its economic life. Germany is not only dealing with an economic crisis, but its fragile coalition government has fallen apart. It's also dealing with an aging population crisis, and at the same time, it is also dealing with a shortage of labor. So many factors involved here. That's what we're going to take a look at when it comes to Germany's economic crisis. Some of the highlights. The economic slowdown in Germany, recession fears are in place. Pivotal EU role that it plays, well, it could drag down the entire EU as a result. Only time will tell whether that is going to happen or not. By some accounts, it may have already. Now, Germany's weak growth is another highlight. The 2024 GDP growth below 1%, and in 2025 predicted to only grow by 1%. The car industry and sector is hardest hit. 30% of the total economy is the contribution of Germany's car industry. That's a big portion of its economy. And the root causes is obviously what we will focus in and zoom in on, which is traced through the automotive sector and the manufacturing sector. It is struggling to embrace newer technologies, and government investment has been blocked.
Germany's economy, once the leader in Europe, is in crisis mode. The country is facing a second year of zero growth. As if that is not bad enough, Germans are preparing for a snap election since the fragile government coalition collapsed, adding more to German woes. Germans are sick and tired of their economic pain and will look to choose a government that would revive the country's economy. This is no easy task given that energy prices are high and companies are cutting jobs. Germany, Europe's largest economy, has not seen significant growth in the past 2 years. The economy recorded a 0.1% growth from July to September, but it is forecast to contract over the entire year. And economists do not expect to see a return to growth in 2025 unless a new government can make significant changes quickly. Layoffs have come from its major sector, the auto industry, like VW, to Bosch, Germany's largest auto supplier. Bosch announced it had planned to cut 5,500 jobs beginning in 2027. More than two-thirds will be at German factories.
Time to take a look at some social media posts. First up, German economy is suffering from the worst lack of orders since the global financial crisis back in 2009. The IFO Institute has stated that expensive energy created expensive products. The expensive products are losing against the competition on the world markets. Next, God's divine justice. That's what happens when you fund and support a genocide in Gaza. We figured to put that in there since that's what many are thinking about Germany. Next, there's a video, a career in Germany is not as rosy as it sounds, with the GDP shrinking by 0.2%. High input costs in core sectors, mass layoffs, and economic slowdown. Both locals and expats are feeling the heat.
One of the funniest rejections that came across me and many others that I know is that you are overqualified for the job.
Even when we complete the studies, getting a job as per our qualifications and as per our background is highly challenging.
Immigrants or non-immigrants, people are losing their jobs. The companies are cutting down the position.
Then Germany's economy has been skirting a recession for most of the past year, as weak export demand, surging energy costs, and rising wages are compressing corporate margins, pushing the country's vast industrial sector deep into a recession. And finally, this post says Germany is in a recession. The economy contracted by 0.3%. In Q1, following a 0.5% contraction in the fourth quarter of last year, plus they're dealing with high inflation at 7.2% in April, and unemployment, meanwhile, to have increased to 5.6%. This is what stagflation looks like. Let me introduce our guest for the first segment of the Q&A. Joining us is Axel Dreher. He's an economist and professor of international and development politics at Heidelberg University over in Germany. Axel Dreher, welcome to Economic Divide.
And thank you for having me on the show.
Let's take a look at Germany's economy, trying to figure out what's going on here. I mean, you have a recession that occurred two consecutive quarters. You have also political uncertainty with the breakdown of the somewhat weak coalition government. And then you have the description being given to Germany, which is pretty wild, and that is the sick man of Europe. Can you describe to us what's going on with Germany's economy?
Well, Germany has a couple of problems right now, some are structural and some temporary. Well, the structural one is an aging population, so we have one of the oldest populations in the world. That puts pressure on the labor market and on social security systems. Another structural one is underinvestment, so there has long been a lack of investment in infrastructure and technology. That, of course, hampers productivity and economic growth. And there's a lot of debate about regulatory burden. So there's excessive red tape regulations that make it difficult for business to operate efficiently. Then we have the energy transition, so the shift away from fossil fuels. It's only partly, but certainly substantially affected by the Russian gas cutoff. So That's a challenge, and it's costly. And then there are global economic factors such as the uneven post-pandemic recovery in China, global supply chain disruptions and things that have impacted the export-driven economy in Germany. Then, as you have mentioned, there's political stability. So there's a government, or there used to be a government consisting of three parties that could hardly agree on doing anything together, and that has hindered decisive economic policy making.
All right, that sounds like a blow there to the whole government because of that not getting along, per se. All right, let's bring our next guest in. We have Radhika Desai joining us. Radhika Desai is a professor in the Department of Political Studies and the director of the Geopolitical Economy Research Group at the University of Manitoba over in Canada. Radhika Desai, welcome to Economic Divide.
I'm Radhika Desai, and yes, thank you very much for having me on your show.
All right, the German economy is not doing well. It has experienced a recession. It has come out of that, but it is set to go back into it again. And you're also looking at this coalition government that has fallen apart. Why are we looking at an economic crisis of this magnitude in Germany?
Germany is being described as a sick man of Europe. That Germany is being described as a sick man of Europe is a big contrast to the past when Germany was regarded as the economic powerhouse of Europe. Germany is, as you say, going through a prolonged recession. And the key reasons that in the discussion in Germany, you will find that the mainstream German press will mention every reason they can think of, but the real reason. And the real reason is that it has essentially lost what the key lifeline that it relies on as a big industrial power, which is a big consumer of energy. It needs cheap energy. And cheap energy from Germany can only really come from Russia. And that is what Germany has lost as a result of its participation on American terms in the Ukrainian conflict. So this is what's happening. And of course, Germany may have some other problems, but because, for example, competition from China, but precisely because Germany has a government that is so intent on preserving the Atlantic relationship that it cannot at all think of the kind of industrial policy that would be needed if it were to rescue German industry. And to add to all of this, there is now the current coalition government has collapsed. It collapsed within a few hours of the election of Donald Trump. And it tells you the extent to which the German government was reliant on a Biden-Harris administration being in power in Washington. This being not the case, the German government has essentially had to give up and has decided to hold new elections.
Time now for the infinite section of the program. First up, Ford and EU layoffs. That's right. The iconic U.S. carmaker, as they call it, has axed 14% of its workforce in Europe. That amounts to about 4,000 employees. The reason given was weak EV or electronic vehicle sales and what they called economic headwinds. The job cuts represent about 14% of Ford's 28,000 workforce in Europe and around 2.3% of its total workforce of 174,000. And it's going to be completed by the end of 2027. Next up, Iran's mining sector is what we picked in terms of its exports, where the exports from this sector has exceeded $7.5 billion for the first 7 months of the Iranian calendar. Exports from the mining sector include metals and minerals, and it has increased by 2% in weight over the same period to reach nearly 36.6 million tons. And just a quick fact about Iran and its steel sector. It is one of the 10 largest in the world. The country has reported a steady increase in production and exports of steel in recent years. Then taking a look at Google in terms of the monopoly status or description that it has been given. And now it has to sell Chrome in order to end the search monopoly. And this is something that the U.S. prosecutors have dictated. The Department of Justice has said that Google has deprived rivals of opportunities to expand their search engine market share. And finally, the UK economy is what we took a look at for our last entry. The budget in that country is blamed for the first contraction in the private sector in a year. Fall in activity in November was pinned on the Chancellor's tax rises, as official figures also show a drop in the October retail sales. Finally, it says Labour's first budget in 14 years has been given the thumbs down by the private sector businesses, as it was blamed for the end to a 12-month run of expansion and a fall in retail sales. I stand corrected. We have another entry, and this one is about the French farmers. We figured it's important to have them included here. The strikes is what the topic is, where they have threatened chaos over the EU trade deal with South America's Mercosur. French farmers have stepped up their protest against a proposed trade pact between the European Union and the four South American countries, the Mercosur bloc of Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, and Uruguay. Now, this bloc would create the world's largest free trade zone, and therefore it shows how important of a trade zone that is. Well, those were the topics we picked for our Infinite News section.
Health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
All right, let's bring back our guests and see what they think. We have Axel Dreyer, who rejoins us. He is an economist. Axel Dreyer, welcome back. Taking a look at Germany, considered once EU's powerhouse, driving the entire EU bloc's GDP growth at one point, but now it's not doing that. Obviously, it's in the opposite direction. One of the reasons has been cited is the high prices of energy. Do you think that this dependence on Russia for cheap energy, and now that it doesn't have that, is the main reason?
Well, it most likely is the main reason, but it certainly is not the only one. The Green Party was part of the government when Russia, or when we decided to reduce reliance on Russian oil and gas. And so there was an ongoing transition to renewable energy that was hardly delayed or hardly stopped at the time. In doing so would probably have been advisable. So there was a closure of nuclear power plants that came at a time where many economists would have preferred to extend the use of nuclear powers for a while. So that led to increased reliance on more expensive energy sources. That certainly is part of the story. Related to this, the transition to renewable energy. So there's a shift that is meant to make Germany rely more on renewable energy for reasons of sustainability. But of course, initially, this comes with huge costs. So the infrastructure investments are high, like solar panels, heat pumps, and other stuff. So that makes current prices more expensive. And there's an increased demand with the recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic, so a larger demand for energy. It also puts upward pressure on prices. The global supply chain issues are just disruptions in the global supply chains, which have affected the availability and cost of energy resources. And then a point that I've mentioned above already, the regulatory and bureaucratic delays in Germany. So bureaucratic processes are slow to adjust. And so the implementation of new energy projects is delayed, which reduces the necessary increase in supply.
Germany is already scrambling to see how it would deal with an incoming U.S. administration headed by Trump when it comes to the issue of tariffs. The vulnerability to a trade conflict could push the struggling economy into a recession. Germany's real GDP stagnated since the second half of 2021. It was poised for another year of slow growth next year, even before Trump won last month's U.S. presidential election. Economists now have lowered their output predictions even further. The U.S. accounted for 10% of German exports in 2023, its highest level in more than two decades. Since 2015, the U.S. replaced France as Germany's single most important trading partner and has continued to grow in importance as China dialed down its appetite for German products and sanctions hit sales to Russia. In short, Germany's economy is crashing for three main reasons: sky-high energy prices, reduced exports to China, and increased military expenditures.
Hello, and welcome to the Quick Tech section. I'm Kiarash from MIT. When it comes to Germany's weak economic data, there are foreign hands at play here, like by the U.S. This was especially true during the time the now U.S. president-elect Donald Trump was in power. And with him coming back into the White House, Germany and the EU as a whole may see the continuation of the U.S.'s destructive policy. It was in 2016 when it came to light that U.S. wanted to stop a coalition between Germany and Russia because the combination of German capital and technology along with Russian natural resources and manpower can counter American dominance. Given NATO's goal was to keep the Russians out, the U.S. in, and the Germans down, U.S. beefed up NATO and focused on establishing a buffer zone. From the Baltics to the Black Sea in Central and Eastern Europe and separate Germany from Russia. This map shows how the U.S. established this buffer zone, which was made from the Baltics to the Black Sea in Central and Eastern Europe and separate Germany from Russia. One of the other ways the U.S. made moves to weaken the EU economy by targeting its powerhouse, the U.S. was through using the energy card. That would mean directly focusing on establishing Russia as the enemy, which was done through the advancement of NATO. After Russia's military operation to Ukraine, the U.S. had done enough scaremongering to have Germany submit to it, and that also meant turning to the U.S. for its energy needs. The reason why energy is so expensive in Germany is that it had to switch from cheap Russian gas to costly liquefied natural gas bought from the U.S. German industry paid about 40% more for energy in 2023 than in 2021, before the energy crisis triggered by Russian special military operation of Ukraine. When electricity prices rise, production costs soar, along with inflation in virtually every sector, negatively affecting trade and investment across the economy. As a matter of fact, Europe's electricity has become so expensive that the threat of deindustrialization has prevailed in Europe, in countries like the UK, Germany, France, Spain, and Italy. And that does it for this Quick Tech section.
We've tried very hard to take a look at why Germany is doing so poorly when it comes to its economy. There are many factors at play here, but it's very hard to really see how a country that contributed so much to the manufacturing process at a minimum of the EU is now just looking at maybe 1% growth, and before that to be in negative territory. At the heart of this matter, however, lies one key issue, and that is the price of energy. The cheap Russian gas is no longer in the picture, and the U.S. has come in and is selling energy to the point that companies and manufacturing is doing poorly in Germany. At least that's one of the key reasons. That does it for this edition of the program. Hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions or comments, do send them to us. From Mikko Vitahve and the team, it's goodbye until the next program.
ocean of dua.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In today's program, we will listen to a commentary of Ziyara al-Yasin by Sheikh Abdul Raza Bahrani, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
On that morn, before the world was born, in this lonely world I hear that music near and far. Did we the cadence of divine music hear? Did we the cadence?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
All praise belongs to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the best and the last of the prophets Muhammad and his pure and infallible progeny and household, especially his last successor Imam Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance. And may Allah's peace and blessings be upon you and with you, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is The Ocean of Dua, and I am Abdul Raza Bahrani. Insha'Allah, I will explain and interpret the passages and sentences of Ziyarat al-Yasin in this series of lectures. Now, let's listen to some passages of this Ziyarat.
The Ziyarah of al-Yasin.
Ya Mawlai, Shaghiya Man خالفكم وسعد من أطاعكم فاشهد على ما أشهدتك علي وأنا ولي لك بريء من عدوك.
O my master, certainly wretched is he who opposes you, and certainly happy is he who obeys you. So testify to me all that which I have besought you to testify. I am verily an ally of you, and denouncing your enemy.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa
We were explaining another sentence of Ziyarat al-Yasin. I mean, وَأَنَا وَلِيٌّ لَكَ بَرِيءٌ مِّنْ عَدُوِّكَ. In this sentence, we declare to Imam alayhi salam and tell him that I love you and I am your friend and ally and I loathe and detest your enemies. Then we talked about this verse of the Holy Quran according which the love for Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam has become obligatory upon us, and that verse was قُلْ لَا أَسْأَلُكُمْ عَلَيْهَا أَجْرًا إِلَّا الْمَوَدَّةَ فِي الْقُرْبَى. And we read you some narrations from the Holy Prophet that was mentioned in the books of the Sunni brothers. And There are so many narrations from the Holy Prophet and from Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam about the love of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. For example, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam mentions hubbi wa hubbu ahli bayti nafi'un fi sab' mawatin ahwaluhun 'azim. The Holy Prophet says that the love for me and my Ahlul Bayt will benefit in 7 different places and stations that their fear is great. What are these seven places and stations? عند الوفاة وفي القبر وعند النشور, at the time of death and the time and inside the grave, and at the time of resurrection, and at the time of book and hisab, reckoning and being counted for the deeds, and عند الميزان, at the time of mizan and balance, and as-sirat. So in these seven places, my love and the love for my Ahlul Bayt will benefit you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. How to pray for the faraj or the relief? Imam al-Asr ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu al-sharif to his second representative, Muhammad bin Uthman rahmatullahi alayh, addressing the Shias, says, pray a lot for the relief, as indeed it is your relief. One who is disturbed, distressed and heartbroken due to the separation from the Imam, the prayers of such a person, they have two effects. Either the Imam's arrival will be hastened, all the afflictions, the problems, and the distresses of the person praying for the relief of the Imam, they will be removed. As a result, he will be eased, he will be pleased, and will be comforted. In either cases, as Imam al-Asr ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif has said, وَأَكْثِرُ الدُّعَى لِتَعْجِيلِ الْفَرَجِ فَإِنَّ ذَٰلِكَ فَرَجْكُمْ. Pray a lot for the relief, as indeed it is your relief.
Allahumma kun liwaliyika hujjat ibn al-Hasan salawatuka alayhi wa ala.
The Ocean of Dua, commentary of Ziyara al-Yasin by Sheikh Abdul Raza Bahrani, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
And there are so many narrations in this regard. For example, another narration from the Holy Prophet says, أَلَا مَنْ مَاتَ عَلَىٰ حُبِّمْ آلِ مُحَمَّدْ مَاتَ شَهِيدًا. Beware that whoever dies on the love of Ali Muhammad, he dies while his heart is filled with the love for the offspring of the Holy Prophet, Mata Shahida. He has died a martyr. It means that he will receive the reward of a martyr. Ala wa man mata ala hubb ali Muhammad mata maghfuran lah. Beware that whoever dies while he has the love for the household of the Holy Prophet has died while his sins are forgiven. Ala wa man mata ala hubb ali Muhammad mata ta'iba. Beware that whoever dies while he has the love for the household of the Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be upon him and his pure and infallible household, has died while he has repented. So there are many, many narrations in this regard, but just love is not enough. This is very important. If it is only for the love of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wa sallam, this is a very good thing, but this is not enough. We need also to detest and denounce the enemies of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wa sallam and those who show animosity towards the household of the Holy Prophet. May God's peace and blessings be upon all of them. So there are many narrations from Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam that we need to loathe and denounce the enemies of Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam. For example, Imam Ridha alayhi salam in a narration says, "Kamalu al-din wilayatuna wal-bara'atu min aduwwana." So the perfection of deen and religion is our wilaya and denouncing our enemies and detesting them. Or in another narration, Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, says, كَذِبَ مَنْ زَعَمَ أَنَّهُ يُحِبُّنَا وَلَمْ يَتَبَرَّأْ مِنْ أَعْدَائِنَا. He who supposes he loves us but does not denounce and does not detest our enemies, he is a liar. He is not telling the truth. There are different narrations in this regard. And for example, the commander of the faithful Amir al-Mu'mineen, God's peace and blessings be upon him, says, لا يكمل إيمان عبد حتى يحب من أحبه الله سبحانه ويبغض من أبغضه الله سبحانه وتعالى. This is very important. You know, when we are talking about the enemies of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, in fact and actually we are talking about the enemies of Allah the Almighty. Because they are loathed and detested by God, we need to detest them and denounce them. And Amir al-Mu'mineen in this narration says that the iman and the faith of a servant will not be complete unless he loves him who is loved by Allah the Almighty, and he denounces those who are denounced and detested by God the Almighty. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Top headlines. The Syrian army, backed by Russian fighter jets, continues to pound terrorist hideouts, inflicting heavy blows on terrorist groups in Idlib, Hama, and Aleppo provinces. President Pezeshkian discusses tensions in Syria with regional leaders as Iran's military advisors arrive in the Syrian capital. And the Israeli ethnic cleansing operations in the past day claims the lives of 37 more Palestinians in the Gaza